This is part one of Radio Free Galisteo's interview with Chris Griscom, the founder of the Light Institute, right here in Galisteo, New Mexico. We will have part two next week. This is John Shannon with Radio Free Galisteo, and I am with
Denise Lynch,
who is also a producer and contributor here on Radio Free Galisteo. Today, we are speaking with Chris Griscom, who is a longtime Galisteo resident and the founder of the Light Institute, where thousands of people from around the world have come for spiritual healing, multi-incarnational work, and
the Dijonin School for Global Consciousness.
Chris is also the author of 18 books, which have been translated into as many languages. And today, we're very fortunate to have you here. Thank you so much for being here, Chris.
Thank you, Captain John. I'm delighted.
Thank you. Let me start off with, why did you come to Galisteo? What got you here?
It's called magnetism. Actually, I'd spent 9 years in the Peace Corps in Latin America, and I wanted to bring my family back to that same kind of energetic, an energy of several languages, an energy of people who understood and walked with on the earth, and had those profound understandings of life and death. I learned so much from them. And so that's what I wanted. So I came to New Mexico. I'd passed through New Mexico before, and we call it the land of enchantment. I call it the land of entrapment. Because if you come here and you're right, you will come back or stay. And I've been in Galisteo 52 years,
wow.
And I have two of my six children born in this town.
So this is your place.
This is my home.
Yes.
Life and death, this is my home.
Well, I think that speaks to the genus loci, the spirit of place.
Good.
And one of the things that I admire about you, and I've known you and been studying with you. I've known you a long time, but I've been studying with you for 36 years. So full disclosure for everybody. And four generations, my grandmother, my mother, my son went to Nijoni, and then myself as well, involved in your work, your multi-incarnational work. And also the fact that you know a lot about the herbs, you know the spirit of the place, you know about the petroglyphs, you know about what grows here. You've seen many people, many generations actually come and go through here. One of the reasons I came out here, to move out here, was because of the sky. And I know that that makes a big difference to you as well.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not just the land, it's also the sky. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes. A Native American once gave me my own special name, which is Sky Eagle. And and I always loved that he saw that in me, you know, that I have this sense of earth and sky and how they're connected and how the cosmos penetrates this place of Galisteo. This Galisteo Basin, you know, first of all, 500 feet down, we have salt water. This was an inland sea, so it holds the history of our planet, of our place. And I found that in the people that lived here. It didn't matter what they did. It wasn't about how they moved in their lives, really. It was about the energy that they carried. And let me say that one of the things that I've always loved about Galisteo is that we may come from different pathways, but there's this profound respect for everyone to live their lives. And I've always loved that. We allow you to be who you are, do whatever you do, and yet there's such a sense of community. There is a grace in not having too much water. When I came here in 1970, there were 300 people counting dogs, and there's still about 300 people counting dogs who live here permanently. And that's supposedly because of the water, but it's also because of what's being held in this beautiful basin, where in times past, more than 2,000 people lived at various of these Indian pueblos around here. And they would say, we come here to talk to our sky brothers. Mm. And the petroglyphs in Galisteo, and I have walked all of this land, and I love the petroglyphs because it's a language, it's a story. It's a story that belongs to the past and the future. And so they would tell in their petroglyphs the story of speaking to their sky brothers.
Yeah, because a lot of them do, people tease about it, but a lot of them do look like aliens.
Oh, sure, yeah.
As well as kind of primitive stories.
Yes, yeah.
Chris, can you talk about the establishment of the Light Institute?
Yes. You know, I started doing incarnational work when I was 14. I started working at 14, and I had the gift of having a mentor who was a beautiful psychic. And first of all, she told me that I would write many books and be a teacher. And I said, my mother was a teacher, and I said, no way. Am I doing any of that? Right. And then here I am today. So that's who she was. And because I was so interested in that sense that I think people have when they come to New Mexico or they come to Galisteo, you talk about that sense of place. You know, that feeling, I've been here before. I know this energy. And sometimes you can smell it. Sometimes you can hear it. It's something that just surrounds and encompasses you.
And, you know, one of the points I want to make is that's not for everybody. A lot of times people
that's
come
right.
here, and it's very harsh.
Very
and
harsh.
And a lot of the things that are inside of them get brought to the surface.
Yes.
So it's good for spiritual work, but... You know, with warning.
Yes.
Enter
it's
if
going
you dare.
To, yes, exactly. It's going to push your emotions. It's going to push you, again, like that sky and earth thing. It's going to push you deeply inside yourself, which is how I got into that kind of work, really. And that's what I said. You know, you come to Galisteo, and it will either encompass you and embrace you, or it will spit you out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's true. So the work began in that way, but it was always kind of a, you know, an interesting thing. I always had that. A capacity when I was a child, just to say a short story, I always felt that rocks spoke to me.
Mm.
And they would say, I don't want to be here, move me over here, and so forth and so on. And so I always, because I was studied by some psychologists, because I was very verbal as a child, and I could hear people's thoughts, and so I thought they were talking out loud, but they were only thinking it. So they were studying to see what was that, but they didn't explain that to me. I was five, and so I thought there was something wrong with me until I was 30 when I finally mentioned it to a friend of mine who was a researcher, and he said, come into my laboratory. And I went in, and he had electrodes sticking on rocks, and they were pulsing. And he said, rocks can speak.
Mm-hmm.
Everything in the material world has a vibration. And so that began to speak to me. But I think that the Light Institute really began as something that I would speak to the world about when I was in the Peace Corps. And I was there as a community development expert and a nutritionist. And I had many babies die in my arms. And that conversation of life and death shocked me so much. It kicked me out of what's the end, what's the beginning, who is the divine force, what is this about, what's your life about. I was only 22. I felt the first baby that died in my arms. I actually took the baby, and I had worked with them before, and shoved her back in the doctor's eyes, because when she passed from her body, her soul went right through my eyes. She looked up at me, and her soul went right through my eyes, and it completely lost. I was never taught in all of my preparation for health about death. You know, in the United States at that time, you take them to the hospital, you put them in a white sheet, and those guys take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was the first death I had been around, and I felt dirty, and I felt angry at God, and I felt like my life was over. And 3 days after that, I was really pretty crazy and angry for 3 days. Her spirit came to me, and this is something that's happened a lot in my life because I've had a lot of near-death experiences, even as a child. But her spirit came to me, and she said, the choice of my death was mine, but the moment of my death was my gift to you.
Wow.
And that changed my life. And that was when I think I began to say, we have to see that there is a purpose. We're not accidentally here. It's not about what we do. It's about who we are and what we bring. So when we talk about incarnational work, that's why we don't call it past lives. Because anything that you perceive, it always comes from you. I don't say anything. When it comes from you, it comes from some deep resource of knowing within you. People say, I couldn't have even made that up. No, because your imagination, your emotional body can only make up what you have a point of reference for. And so what I love about that is it tells them the story of your present life and the gifts that you have or what you're working with, what you're moving through. So it's a joyous thing for people.
It's so useful. It's so helpful.
And I always say, you're the best movie in town.
You know,
I've been doing that for 60, I think something like 66 years, something like that, that I've been doing the incarnational work. And I've never gotten tired of it, because you don't know who anybody is.
Yeah, but also I think that we have to share with some people who this will be interesting too, is how many planets in Gemini do you have? And one of the best qualities of a human is curiosity, and you definitely possess that in space. So
six.
You make it look easy, but curiosity takes a certain amount of courage, I think.
Yes. Well, you have to learn how to remove yourself from it. So I'm not associating to what you say or judging it or trying to manipulate it. I'm only letting your own inner voice, your higher self, whisper the questions that will illuminate for you what's important for you to come back and recognize. And then, of course, in our work, which is so different from anyone else's, as soon as we look at these lifetimes, we begin to dissolve the crystallization of them. Because if you dissolve, and this is true in this lifetime, a lot of my work has to do with this lifetime. If you dissolve a memory, then the energy of it will return to the unmanifest, but the power of it will come back to you. And that is very important, to continually evolve ourselves or allow ourselves to let go. Because I also studied psychology, but I left psychology because I saw that I could be working with a 60-year-old, but as soon as we started poking about their memories when they were a child, they went right back to that place. They saw themselves entangled and entrapped in whatever number of child they were, whatever they experienced as a child, and they didn't realize that it was a gift to them. And I know now, without a shadow of a doubt, that we choose our parents.
Yeah,
we do. We know them from incarnations. To me, it would not be rational to think you would have one life, because if you're a male or you're a female, that's only half of the story. Genetically, you're half your mother and half your father. So for me, you have to experience, because that's the way life is.
I think one of the things that's very fascinating about you individually is to take the healing arts, mm-hmm. which you've developed in your own voice, and also science and what's happening, because
that's right.
We're at a crossroads with it that's unlike any other time on the planet.
That's right. It's very exciting, you know, Denise, because one of the books that I wrote, which is called Soul Bodies, talks about the genetic encoding. And we have a series that works on that, and it's so fascinating to see psychogenetically what we inherit, because we not only have physical DNA, but we do have emotional DNA. That's why we can say, oh, you got the gift of gab, or the capacity to write or be eloquent, from your mother or your grandmother or somebody else. That's emotional DNA. It piggybacks our physical DNA. And science, it can't see it in its technology as yet, but it recognizes it. It's beginning to talk about that. Mm. That there is an element that is not just physical in terms of blood, because you can inherit psychogenetically, emotionally, or spiritually from a teacher or a friend or an enemy. And that's that important thing about life, and my work is to help you realize what you know. Not what somebody else knows, but what
that's
you know.
That's interesting. Let's talk a little bit about that, because I know you're exploring that in the book that you're working on.
Yes.
Potential Body.
Yes.
Can you speak about that a little bit, just to give us a teaser? Because I think that's related to it, is it not?
Oh, it's my latest book. The last one was called The Evolution of God, and that was about 4 years ago. And this one I've been diddling with for a while, because I wanted to bring forward all the things that I learned about healing from my first teacher, who was a Mexican curandera, all the way through, you know, and show, and acupuncture, and all the things. I've studied them all. All of the things that I've learned. What I'm really saying in that book is that what we must come to, and this is what this virus is teaching us, is that we have to realize that it's not the outside world that heals us. It's the inside environment, whether you're talking about your blood or whatever. The internal environment in you is what protects you. And so we can use things from the outside world. Right now we're using technology, science, to protect us, but it doesn't really. No, for example, I know people right now that have had all the boosters and still they got the new one. Mm. But what I have been saying for more than 30 years is that the viruses that have no brain are beating us because they can transmit their genetic encoding across the planet. And that's what we're seeing. But aha, one of the gifts that have been taught to me by my higher self is that the Creator is changed by its creation. So what we're seeing right now with the viruses, for example, is that they're going to weaken. The more that they mutate, the more that they weaken, the more that we, our bodies begin to go, aha, I can play with that, I can do that. But in this book, I think one of the big messages, again, potential body helix of enlightened health, which means how do we have enlightened health? We use our consciousness to talk to our bodies, to realize that your body can tell you what kind of medicine it wants, how much it wants, what it wants you to do. It can tell you all kinds of things, and anybody can do it. I taught this to the children in Galisteo.
And it can tell you the story that it wants to live out, too. You can,
yes, it doesn't
want to be sick.
I think
a lot of people get stuck in their story.
That's right.
You know?
And that's their way of saying, my cancer, my disease, my broken hip. You know, instead of, well, this happened to me, but what's the gift?
Yeah.
My first teacher said, whole in the spirit, whole in the body. And she didn't mean that if something happened to your body, something was wrong with your spirit. The other way around. She meant, take anything that happens to you, whether you get sick or you break something, and explore with your body. What's the purpose? What's the teaching of it? Because that will help your spirit evolve.
So maybe you could go right into this question that my son has, who was raised in Galisteo.
Absolutely.
Then he joined the military. Mm-hmm. And so his question, how does a warrior come home?
The first and most important thing is to find the way to let go of any judgment you have about yourself or what you did. Rationalization. I did it because that's my duty as a military person. No, you did it because there was some karma. There was some purpose in terms of your evolution. Everything we experience, whether it's terrible and unspeakable, is part of our evolution. And I could go into that from a third dimensional or an incarnational perspective of being a warrior in other lifetimes or something that has to balance there, you know, that he could find in a story. But what I would say to him is the warrior in him is a part of who he is. And all he has to do is to switch that warrior so that he feels that the battle is a battle of light, a battle of, not light against darkness, but a battle of evolution, because I think of light as evolution, you know, that he needs to see himself at this moment. And when he comes home, it's not the home he grew up in. This is how I got away from psychology into what I do, is that we can't go back. You can't go back to what it was, but you can pluck that, because people who were here 2,000 years ago still walk on this land. By the way, that's how I chose Nijoni land. We call it the Giggle Land, because when I walked there, every time I walked, I found an arrowhead, I found a piece of pottery, I found something. I felt the joy of the people that lived there. It's always around us. So what I would say to him about being a warrior is that you can choose. Now, I do know some techniques that help PTSD, and I would love to share them because I can't do it through the radio. But there are many ways that you can shift. And the thing that I want to say to him is shift away from allowing your emotional body to run away with you and learn how to bring, to exchange that. Let me just give a little briefing about how the emotional body works, because that will help what we're talking about. The emotional body doesn't have time and space, and this is why you could be 60 and still going over in your mind, I didn't get mine, or I wasn't loved, or whatever it is, you know. And so, because it doesn't have time, what it does is it goes over things. Now, negative experiences and negative thought forms are very strong. They're sticky. And so they're easy to access. I remember when you did that to me or that happened, you know. But moments, and I've worked with children who have been taken away from their parents because of abuse, and I've watched them. Children will let go of, they'll go off and play. You know, everybody else is in the depth of all of that. And they're out playing in the sand because they have that capacity at some point to focus on something else. What happens with negative energies, in other words, what I'm saying is that high energies, good energies, they're like a flicker. We don't remember that we were happy as children. We don't remember what we did that we loved as children, which is always going to be a part of what you could do now in your life. So what happens with negative memories and negative energies, they, again, the emotional body influences the physical body. So we hold within the mind of the cell and the parts of our bodies memories. And so what happens is that when you have a bad experience, even if it's right this second, it creates a biochemistry. It's like an addiction. It's exactly an addiction. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is that when you get fearful or angry, it stimulates biochemistry. And that creates this through your body. And the brain becomes addicted to it. And so this is why I'm saying that it's very important to get hold of your emotional body and say, it's not that I'm going to pretend this didn't happen. I'm going to come to a place where I see this as part of my evolution that was important for me at that time. But what's important to me at this time?
This is Radio Free Galisteo. Music and information from the Galisteo Basin. Radio Free Galisteo is listener supported. Go to www.radiofreegalisteo.com and click on our Patreon support button to become an active supporting member of Radio Free Galisteo.
Why is that acceptance place such a huge threshold for people? Where does imagination come into this?
Well, you know, even in all of our great understanding of science and how the brain works and the different lobes of the brain and all of that kind of stuff, we still don't really understand imagination. We don't know what triggers it. And what I feel triggers it is that we are soul energies. And we have a repertoire that's so beyond our outside mind, our outside intellect. And so it's only when we begin to expand our consciousness that those imaginations come to the fore. Every visionary, Jung, Einstein, they always talked about how they got their information in dreams. Mm-hmm. They got it when they let go and their consciousness expanded. And that's why that's so important. And so I would say with PTSD, you want to take up, there are two aspects that I would bring up initially. You want to take up giving yourself that capacity to expand a sense of yourself that is full of positive energy. Full of energy that makes you say, I am who I am. The Brazilians have a great expression. It says, I am who I am, no better, no worse, and I find it good. You know, and we want to be to that place. You can actually choose that. Now, there's another aspect that I would bring to any kind of negativity like that in terms of the biochemistry absorbing and being addicted to, let's just kick this negative thing. This is why people in the news, they want to see the bad news.
The sensationalism.
You know, they want to see a scary movie because they can feel that stimulus. It's electromagnetic and it's biochemical and you can feel it. And it gives you a jolt and you feel like you're alive. If you're scared or you're angry, boy, you're right present. Whereas otherwise you might be talking heads off someplace or whatever, you know. So that's why we need to come to a place where we begin to perceive ourselves with that energy, that higher consciousness says, all that has happened, all that will happen is a part of my choice. So the second part of that is a physical part. There's something that I've learned that I've put in the book that science knows that's been a great gift to all of us, is that the neurotransmitters that make us feel happy, like L-DOPA, they're actually made in the intestines, which I find very interesting. Mm. Because in one of my books, I talked about how each part of the body has its own repertoire, has a purpose. So the intestines are where the small intestine is where we absorb life, what we've taken in through the stomach, and we put it in the blood and back to the brain. And then the large, all the other intestines that we have are really about grief. They're about what we're getting rid of. And so if your intestines are not working, you will not have the serotonin, the L-DOPA, these nerve transmitters in the brain that make you feel happy or that will give you a balance. They give you a balance and say, you're fine. You can go on now. One of the things that I talk about in this book is that we have the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic is fight or flight, which most of us are on most of the time. But the parasympathetic, I learned this in high school and I always loved it. When the parasympathetic kicks on, slows down your brain and brings you into a kind of a meditative or peaceful state. But the thing that happens in your brain is that the brain says, you can eat now. And I always love that, you know. And if you watch, especially cancer people, but I mean astrologically cancer people, emotional people, when they get emotional, they can't eat. You know, it's only when they're calm. And this is true of everyone. This is very true of children. And this is why I work so much with children, to teach them how to, if they have a tummy ache, they're sucking in somebody's energy and how to get that out of them. So we have to realize that what we eat, what we think, how we move in our lives, and that's why I came to Galisteo, for the way that people move in their lives here.
What about the future of Galisteo?
Well, again, just as the child coming back, and I know this well because, again, I have six children raised in this town, two born here, and so they always are, what's happening in Galisteo, what's going on. I remember when McKee built the first group of houses up there, you know, I was so indignant. And then I had to realize that, again, we could absorb that in such a way, or isolate it or do something with it. So I've had a long process of learning about how there will always be change. Galisteo, though, again, through the water, at least the hub of our village, I feel, will always stay more or less the same, because even if newcomers come, and this is a different conversation in a way, how can we treat that? How can we treat the future as it comes into Galisteo? We treat it by who we are. And what I'm seeing happening, I have to take this onto a global level because I work on a global level, is that the mandate for all humanity at this time is to realize that we have to use our voice. But, and this is what numerologically is called a sixth year. It's a year in which health and community are very essential. But it's 2-2-2. And mathematically, mathematical numbers have always been essential from the beginning of time, and they always will be in terms of science. That's always two. It's a collective. And so the mandate is how we work collectively. Whether that's the old guys and the new guys, or however those divisions are created inside us, we have to, what we say at the Light Institute, we have to pierce the heart. We have to not look at the outside or even what someone's doing, but who's in there? And this is what I've learned through my incarnation work. Who's in there? The moment that I can find a way to access who's in there, those bridges fall apart. And that's when I can become the mentor or the student, because I always say, who the student, who the teacher? The teacher is always learning from the student, which is the same way that the creator is changed by its creation. And so if we want to recognize that there is growth going on around us, and there are those that are coming in that want to say, this is how it should be, let us show you how to do it in the big world, you know, we need to say, let us show you why you've come here. Because I know, after my 52 years here, that people come to Galisteo because they long to be themselves. They long to have peace. They long to be able to feel as if they can communicate. And in this village, we still have that sense, whether we talk to each other or see each other. And especially now, and let me use this moment to say thank you to both of you for what you've done here. Because you're bringing this village together and allowing us to know, oh, this is happening to so-and-so, or this is going on. And so how do we answer that individually, but more importantly, as a group? And what I'm seeing on the planet now is that people are starting to speak as a group. Now, of course, just like teenagers, we usually know what we don't want instead of what we do want.
Right.
And so we start out with, no, just as a teenager does, whatever it is, I'm not like you.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I always laugh with parents and say, well, at about 16, they start realizing that you're not God. And then they start realizing all the things that are wrong about you and your life. And then at about 22 or so, they suddenly begin to say, wow, you've changed so much. But really, it's them that's changed. So when we talk about these beings come in, it's very important for us to find the way to help them to know that they came here, not because they've come here to superimpose how a corporation works or how they do it in the real world, the big world, but they've come here because spiritually they need this. Mm-hmm. They need us, and they need us to reflect that for them. Yeah. So that they can reflect it, feel it in their lives, be healed by it, and carry it. So, again, they may think that they've come to teach how a bigger way to do things, a better way, better water, better whatever it is. But they can do that only truly when they have absorbed the lessons from the deepest and most spiritual and simplest. Because my work is very, very simple. The simplest way. So we have to find that bridge there.
Yeah, how lucky we are.
The beauty
way.
That's right.
Yeah.
I love that you say that, because if we keep our consciousness on that, it helps us to look at others in a different way, you know, and to
really
see.
Without so much resistance.
Yes. And what I notice with people, again, is that we tend to project. This is a big word in psychology, and I've definitely seen this all my life. We tend to project deep energies inside us, because the emotional body, again, just looks at an outside situation and tries to see how that's something that it knows, you know, it's experienced before. So it's very easy to look at outside people and say, you're taking away my power, or you're changing my life, or you're moving my as we laugh about it in my family, you're moving my chi, so to speak, as, you know, my cheese, as if, you know, don't take my cheese. You know, and this is very true. So instead of giving all that power away and projecting onto the other guys that are taking away from us, we want to come back to say, let us show you. If you had somebody who was, you know, sort of coming in with the new ideas, you took them for a walk in Galisteo. Just take them for a walk. I used to have people come from New York and big cities, and they'd be so anxious, and I'd say, just go out and feed my horse out here. Just go stand in the wind for a little while. Half my work was done in 10 minutes of them standing around, you know.
This is reminding me that early on in the history of Radio Free Galisteo, we had a guest on the show who I didn't realize until after I had started talking with him. He had come here really to find a lot of these things you're
exactly.
talking about. It's Dennis Kucinich. And we had Dennis on, and we began talking, and he said, oh yeah, I love Galisteo. It's one of the most incredibly beautiful places in the world. And of course, when I first I told Denise, hey, we've got Dennis Kucinich is going to be on the show. She goes, oh yeah, Dennis.
That's right.
But he spent a lot of time with you.
He still does.
Yeah.
He still does. And it's beautiful for me to see that someone who had the gift of being a beautiful statesman, who always could reach across, okay, you're saying this, let's find the solution, you know, that by deepening his own sense of self, that he really could bring that to the fore. And he always acknowledges Galisteo as a place that he saw what was true for him.
Oh, absolutely. And it was such a pleasure to have that come out in the course of discussing his, it was his new book that at the time, to find out that, well, a lot of what drove him, he'd learned about himself here too. So.
You know what's funny is that he sent me an email at one point and said, I'm going to be on an interview in Galisteo community. And I said, what? Galisteo what? And I hadn't heard about it. I thought he was joking with me. And then I found you guys.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of the great teachings of my life when I first started doing acupuncture. You were talking about earlier, you know, I was looking around for people to practice on. And so a man came one time with his wife, and it was late, and I had all my kids to feed. And he said, well, couldn't you do these windows to the sky on me? And could you please do it on my wife? And she was this very mousy woman with her head down and her shoulders curved. And I said, you know, I just don't have time for this. And he said, oh, please, please, just do her, just a little bit of her first. This was a great lesson. And so I took her in, and this may sound esoteric to some of you, but it's true. And I laid her down, and I stuck the gold needles in her, and instantly, I had, call it intuition, no, but I saw this with my physical eyes. A 7-foot Lemurian stood up next to her and said, "Now do this." And I that at that moment, I learned, you don't know who anybody is until you reach in and pierce the heart. And so, again, why do any of us get sick? Why do any of us experience, people will say to me, well, if I was such a great being, why am I just such a, you know, just an average schmo in this lifetime? And I'll always say, just take a look at some of the lifetimes. People will say, oh, I had this lifetime, I was just a peon and I slaved away and finally I died. And you know, I was hoping for something more interesting about who I am. And I say, wait, did you connect to nature? Well, of course. My whole life is nature. Oh, did it bring you peace? Well, absolutely. Oh, and how about your death? How was your death? Well, death is just a natural thing. Oh, don't you think that maybe that could support you now? So it's so wonderful to, as you guys are doing, to just, whoever it is, and especially here in Galisteo, people live quiet lives, and you may never know the things that they do or the things that even that they feel. But yet they create, and this is so much a part of the Light Institute work, an energy that radiates out from them.
Yeah.
And so people will say, they come to Galisteo and they feel an energy here. It's us. It's us and the earth and the sky and the animals and the plants. That's what it is.
And speaking of not knowing who you're talking to, you're all listening to someone who is recognized as a Mahatma.
That's right. A great, which means great soul, which is a pretty rare, a lot of people don't know this. Like, you know, I get tickled by people who, in this area, they don't know what Nijoni means. They drive by. They're very curious about, like, the globes. They're very curious about you. And they don't realize the global contribution that you've made. And I mean, I'm just going to say the IBAM, I don't know if people know what that is.
The Indian Board of Alternative Medicine in Calcutta.
And the Sewa Chakra Award that you've gotten. You were the only woman and the only United States citizen. And so I'd like to know a little bit about what you think about having that bestowed upon you. Because that's by a lot of the heavyweights of the world in India that are trying to do major healing of all different kinds. Ayurvedic. I mean, that's the think tank, basically, of humanity. So what's that like for you? And can you talk about that a little?
Well, first of all, it's very funny for me because I went to give a speech at this Indian Board of Natural Medicine where they were giving out certificates of healing to about 500 people. And so I was on the plane and thinking, what can I talk about? What can I say to the Indians, you know, who have given us meditation, who have given us peace, or whatever. And so my higher self gave me this word, psychogenetics. So I got up and I started talking about psychogenetics, you know, how we inherit down through legacies, energies that we could become aware of and utilize or discard, which is very important. And instead of standing behind the lectern, I moved to the side. They were so taken by this woman standing full on that they changed the award, rushed up and gave me only, you know, Mother Teresa was given this award and the Dalai Lama was given this award.
Yeah.
So at first I didn't even get what they were talking about, but they always called me Mahatma, great soul. What I learned from that is that we are all Mahatma. And that's what my work is. We are all Mahatma. We are all great souls. So if anyone reflects to you in any way, it could be your dog that reflects to you that you're a great being, that you're a loving being, that you're a good being, it changes how you feel about the world and how you carry yourself in the world. And that's what matters. So for me, it helped me to take that next level of let me be a Mahatma and let me reflect, because that's what the Light Institute and Nijoni is really about. It's about reflecting the highest potential in every person.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, it's not about me, it's about them. And when people have that sense, just think, if you could walk away from this conversation and say, Mahatma, It's a beautiful word, Mahatma. They called Gandhi Mahatma, you know. It will immediately uplift you, and it'll allow you to look out at the world through eyes that feel the compassion. Or you talked about curiosity, or that capacity to poke. Mm-hmm. Who's in there, you know? Because it's not about what happened to you, though we work a lot with that, but it's about who's in there.
What are you going to do with it now?
And what are you going to do with it now?
Yeah.
And that's what this...
Potential.
Potential body
is about. Needs to be used. It's like having talent. You have to do something with it as well.
And the same is true of your body. Instead of thinking that your body is just this body that you can't trust, that any second it's going to die on you or hurt you, you know, because a lot of people feel that way. They don't trust their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas your body is your best friend. It's trying to help you. Your body doesn't want to be sick. It wants to show you how you could use life. And one of the things that came to me in my six death experiences was an echo from the cosmos that said, use life. Don't have life use you. Use life. And I would say the same about Galisteo. When we think about the future, I think the future is going to be filled with the beauty and the power of the people. We are the future of Galisteo. We are the future. And even those great Mahatmas like your mother, Priscilla Hobeck, like some of these others who have lived here and contributed here, their legacy, their psychogenetics flows through this area. So it's simply the choice of what we look at. And that's what's so beautiful about Galisteo. As you look at Galisteo, I mean, people do come here and say, well, where's the green?
Yeah, so the dirt roads,
the
and adobe, what are you looking at?
And I say,
how can you stand
the sky?
It?
Look at the sky, look at the gold, look at the wind, walk, get your shoes off, walk barefoot on our soul. Just 5 minutes and come back and tell me what Galisteo is for you.
Join us next week for part two, the conclusion of our interview with Chris Griscom, the founder of Galisteo's Light Institute.